Hey there, After Buzzers. We're talking The Handmaid's Tale. We got June on the run. We have flashbacks with her mom, so we finally get some more info on that. And we got a sexy bathroom scene. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I just felt like Janelle Monáe's Americans was way too appropriate for this episode.
Scary when they're trying to run to Canada.
Well, and the idea of Resistister is super strong in here, and maybe we will win this fight.
You're just making statements all day, absolutely, every day. That is the show,
Well, welcome to The Handmaid's Tale. We're talking about episode 3, Baggage. We got our panel here.
The panel is here, yes. Yeah. I am back. So good to be back, guys. Hey, everyone. I'm Veronica Barriga, and I'm excited about this episode. I want to talk about the feminist part because I've got a lot to say about that.
Indeed.
Yes.
Again, I'm just really, really loving every time I go to Canada and see little America and learn about the immigrant story from an American perspective, which is so rare and almost you never see it. And it's just been really fascinating to watch it unfold, especially with her, this character in particular.
Yeah. I was going to say, introduce yourself too.
I'm also Joelle. Hi. You guys know me.
Well, in case somebody was new,
I'm Joelle Monique. Hi.
and I'm Carrie Lane. So let's dive into this. So at the beginning, I was so happy to see June training, essentially, like doing the jogging thing.
Yeah.
It made me think of like Omega Man, that's like when you're chilling and you got some downtime, you need to be ready to run for your life, literally.
Or like Rocky, right?
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah,
boom,
just
boom,
constantly.
Let it go.
and then she's been there 2 months, which we were kind of wondering how long this is going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm glad she's like, it's been 2 months, which... Do we think it would be about that long before things started going, or is this about when we were on course? So we're like, yeah, that's about how long we thought.
You mean by how long Mayday comes and gets her, like the next
step? Yeah, well, because last time we were like, oh, how long is Nick going to really like leave her in the dark here? I thought it was going to be a little while. 2 months is, because you need things to die down a little bit. Apparently it wasn't long enough.
I don't know. I think there is no formula. I think Mayday just operates however they can. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got to go in there in 3 weeks, you do what you got to do. 2 days, get them out. You just got to do things when you can. I don't know that it has a strict formula.
Schedule, sure. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to see her adapt to her environment so well. Even the mural that she built, which before was so hard for her to come across, is now just a daily stop on her run.
Yeah. And it's a good way to be familiar with your environment, too, which is good because if she's there and if something did happen,
right,
be good to know your surroundings. But then that kind of leads into her comment, though, of her mother telling her that women are so adaptable and get used to things, which is like a good thing and bad thing because adaptable, good trait. Yes, like you can adapt to a situation, but getting used to it is where it's bad because if something negative, generally you just get used to it and you tolerate it instead of going, no, this isn't correct.
Yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword, but the way I saw that was almost like it's a survival skill, you know? Yeah, I mean, we are adaptable and we can do what it takes to survive, but when you push us to the brink and to the edge, that's when it sort of turns the other way and you become, you know, you sort of rip out of the situation and do what you gotta do, so.
It harks back to her comment in the truck from last episode where she was like, you know, it's incredible how fast we can get used to new things. And we have to be adaptable. I think women from every era/generation has had to evolve and fit into the kind of confines that they've been restricted to.
Absolutely. And then someone who's not as restricted, we jump over to Moira, walking by or doing her own run as well. I think if I was in that world, I would be jogging every day and be ready to run for your life at any moment.
Yeah.
But she goes by the memorial. Did you guys notice the like kind of paper nooses hanging from the tree? Super creepy, but a good testament, like, memorial thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the tree, and there were, like, nooses, but they're more, like, out of, like, a...
A twisted-up newspaper, almost?
Yeah, or streamer. Mm-hmm. Like, more like a white streamer. But it makes sense.
I love the editing on that. You see June run, then you see her best friend run in two different, completely separate worlds.
Yes.
Different worlds, but still,
same
just mindsets, as powerful.
Though.
Exactly.
Still locked into that same space. The mural kind of reminded me of the new lynching memorial that's in Mississippi or Alabama. I can't remember. There are giant stones attached to like poles with names carved in them. But it's reminiscent and necessary and kind of scary.
Yeah. Then we get to the home where it's Luke. What is the girl who doesn't speak's name? I wasn't able to catch it. And then I'm like, I remember her from before, but I don't remember her name. But
I don't remember.
She's there with him.
Yeah, I don't remember her name, but I remember her cute little one line in the episode.
Oh, yes, that was super fun.
Blessed be the Fruit Loops.
Yes. How long have you been sitting on that one? She's a while.
Yes. But that's a moment where we get a little nugget from Luke where he's saying the British and Canadian military are getting ready on the border. So then I'm like, oh, are we going to have an invasion? Because he kind of suggests. Do we think there's going to be an invasion?
I definitely think there's going to be a war. Absolutely. War. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense, especially if you think about the amount of stuff that America imports. Mm-hmm. This is now hurting a global economy, mm-hmm. most likely. And it was the government was taken over by radicals. Yep. So, I mean, America has done this multiple times where we just pop into a different country that has nothing to do with us to be like,
yeah.
hey, there was a government here we liked before and now they're gone. So we need to correct that. So it wouldn't surprise me if British came in and was like, excuse us.
Like, hold on. Then an interesting change, which I get it as a way to pass time as well. For June, when she's doing the newspapers and she's grasping at straws, kind of comedic name for it just because I watched the show Scream. I'm like, it's her murder board of, like, trying to figure out the connections of everything.
That was way too close to home. That moment was really horrifying. When
of
she's
connecting the dots?
Because when she says it was there all of the time.
Oh,
and you
yes.
look at the things that are on there, you're like, yeah. so that's happening and that right. is happening.
What were some of the titles that jumped out at you? Do you recall?
Mostly just restrictions on basic things. Like, I cannot remember a specific one. I'm trying to remember. I think there was something on reading, like a literature.
For me, it was like a timeline, right? So mm-hmm. all the little things that led up to where we are yeah. now. The militarization of the police was like, boom. I was like, yep, that's right. And then right next to it was, I wrote, the curtailing of civil rights as, you know, as sort of a result of what the step was before. And she had a timeline and, of course, leading up to where we are now. But, yeah, she was able to sort of go back and be retrospective about, you know, how everything happened. It, kind of like, you know, boiling a frog, and then you wake up one day, and here we are in Gilead.
Well, that's why she's
so
pointing
that's
out.
Great.
Yeah, that her mom was someone who had seen this coming, because mm-hmm. she's like, did anybody see this coming? And it was you, which leads to her mother's, that first flashback, when she goes to the protests with the mom. Oh, and writing the names of all the rapists was like, and she comments on
that's
how
that's a real protest that frequently happens.
Oh,
yeah.
It seems like it'd be very cathartic as well of doing that. I wouldn't dare to claim what anybody would do to help get over that, but almost in burning the names is more like a silencing of it instead of having them be spoken. But then again, it dismisses them because they don't even get a name.
Yeah, it's symbolic. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I could see that, yeah.
Well, and, I mean, I don't know if you guys have... I do a lot of Burning Man events, and there are different kinds of ways symbolically people burn things. Like people burn things they wish for, people burn things they want to forget. Mm-hmm. And so I think the idea, the tribe mentality of like getting together with your sisters mm-hmm. and taking a stand and proclaiming like for yourself that I'm not going to let this continue to happen without causal action afterwards. Yeah. I was really also impressed with, like, I love seeing older women on TV.
Yeah.
I have a big hang up with Hollywood casting young women to play older women. Mm-hmm. Because we have so many capable women of all ages who can just play the roles that they are actually the age for. It just makes sense. Yeah. So to see, like, old women with different types of bodies, like, actively protesting, like, mm-hmm. women get shit done. So it was really cool to see that.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it. I protest a lot in real life. I'm an activist. For me, I was like, my sister, my hippie chick sister is out there. She's doing it. She's got her girls. And, you know, the whole burning thing could also mean, like, a rebirth for a lot of people.
True.
Like, you know.
It's like a
phoenix. The
phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Speaking of incredible women, I want to tell you guys about our big sister, Maria Menounos. If you want to have fun, learn, and grow in all areas of your life, we have a podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of your life. For help, from health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more, let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let her know it was us, the Handmaid's Tale panel, that sent you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos, Podcast Edition. Check it out.
check it out.
Yay. And then if you are watching this live, welcome. Join us in the live chat. If you're watching it later, welcome as well. And comment down below your thoughts on the episode, because often every episode is so much to unpack and talk about.
Truth.
Yes. So we kind of get an interesting little tricky romance moment with her and Nick in the morning, because he's like, well, why didn't you wake me up? And she's like, well, when I wake you up, you leave.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, don't get the real coffee, because you're going to get in trouble. And it's just one of those, like, oh, it's cute, but this is, they're trying to figure out how they work now. And I don't know, I want to know, like, her moment that leads into with, are you working on Hannah, getting Hannah? I kind of was like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know if he actually is. Do you think he's working on trying to get Hannah out?
I don't know if he can at this point. That's a lot to ask for. I mean, obviously, I understand where she's coming from, and yeah, it's a reasonable demand, and you're a mom, and you want your baby, but in this world, you know, it's like, you know, it can take 2 months or 2 years. It's just completely unpredictable. And I think you need to sort of take one day at a time, take one task at a time, because there's so much at risk here.
Yeah.
Nick's not even fully informed on how he's going to get her out. So my guess is, yes, looking into it. But what does that mean? That's like asking a question and waiting a long time for an answer and kind of looking around. Also, those children are highly protected. So, like, it's one thing to be a pregnant handmaid and, like, you had a few minutes to, like, compose yourself, and that's how you were able to sneak out. And that was like a once in a lifetime chance, and it had to be really organized. You had to move so quickly. To do that with a kid is going to be twice as hard, and I guess it's take twice as long. So I liked the whole, like, back and forth. I like where their relationship is now. Mm-hmm. It's interesting and also terrifying to be like, look, I would like you to live to see me again, so I'll just take regular coffee.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we do believe he is trying to continually help her, because it's one of those like, I feel, I'm like, I want to trust him 100%, but I still have like a little bit reserve where I'm like,
I think he's not a good guy.
He would do something bad, but it's still one of those, like, how much is he going to pull through?
He's lawful neutral. He will do whatever it takes to survive. Yeah. That's something that we've seen so far. So hopefully she's never, and especially now that she's captured. Oh, my God. It's so scary.
Then we hop back to Moira real quick, of that moment where she's helping the guy kind of join civilization. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I was military, then I became a guardian, and then I had to kill a guy who I was dating.
You know,
you're just like, oh.
To me, that kind of felt like a Me Too moment, like a hashtag Me Too, you know, where you just had this empathy and you sort of understood each other in a way that maybe nobody else had to go through this awful situation. And I don't know, I just liked that she was kind of like, okay, I can't even get caught up in this. It was almost like, switch it off. Okay, I hear you, but you're going to be all right. And then back to reality, I felt like she kind of stopped a little bit instead of getting too much into it. You know what I'm saying?
I felt like she was kind of guiding him to the emotional steps of, like, how do you adjust to a new space?
Sure.
And I was really intrigued.
And counseling. There's counseling down the hall, kind of a thing.
Well, and I was really intrigued by this whole time we've been watching, like, the obviously oppressed, right?
Yeah.
But if you're gay, you know, as we know, it can be easy to hide in plain sight. As we saw last week with the guy who's Muslim, it's easy to hide in plain sight if there's
This week, even. The
Muslim guy.
Yeah. They have the Quran under the bed.
Was that this week? I thought it was last week.
No, it's this
week.
Oh, okay.
Wait, quick question. Yeah. Was that Muslim? Because I don't know if it was Hinduism or Buddhism.
I thought it was the Quran.
It was the Quran. Okay.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
I wasn't sure. Yeah.
But
because they had the prayer mat.
Also, it was wrapped up in the prayer mat.
That was this one.
But yeah, I was really kind of shocked at how we got to see someone who was a part of oppressing people. And how that affected him as well.
Yeah.
What was the, like, how can you get caught up in that and become the thing that you hate?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have a choice, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's
well, it makes the show more well-rounded to see the other people oppressed in different ways, too, of, like, obviously, there's varying degrees of how much it sucks to be in that situation, but it's nice to see the other ones, too, just to know, like, almost that, you're not really alone, be like, they had to suffer, too.
Again, Gilead is good for nobody.
No. Yeah. Nobody.
Then we hop back to June, and then she's on the move again, but the thing that was kind of interesting, I thought, was when she's leaving, she's almost like, I don't want to leave. It's because kind of the harkening back to the beginning of, like, you know, become adaptable, get used to things. This kind of became her home for a little bit. And then also the uncertainty of being on the move again. I was like, oh, this sucks for you, of just constantly not being able to be grounded anywhere. Because even if this, like, is her temporary, like, prison holding, it's like she still, like, got used to it.
It became her home. Like, she ran it. She knew what was going on.
And then it's like, move again. And even like, I have things. And the guy's like, nope.
You can't.
So goes with I'll the title, baggage. Them. Like, get you are the baggage. Yes.
Yeah.
He says, I'll get rid of your things. Don't worry about it, girlfriend.
Well, that almost kind of makes me think, too, of like natural disasters. Like, if you had to run right now, what would you grab? And this, like, you can't grab anything.
Well, the like, people in coat. Hawaii.
Yeah.
That just went down to the lava in Hawaii. That was nuts. No one could saw that coming. Yeah. Wow.
It's real life. And then fires here in California. So it's one of those, like, yeah, you think of what really is important. It's like you getting out safely and alive. Then we jump back to another wonderful flashback with the mom. So this is, we'll get to the, I know you're excited for that, but I thought that was interesting when they're kind of having that powwow at the house and they're all like talking everything. And June just seems like she wasn't good enough and wasn't like proactive enough for her mother. And how frustrating that is for a child to be like, you want your parents' approval and the mom's kind of like, oh, that's nice what you do.
But it's not enough, No. And then she pointed out that her friend Moira was like, oh, she's an activist for the gay community. Kind of like, what are you doing to contribute to society? But this character, can I get into that?
Yeah, okay.
So much to say. No. I am a very proud feminist, and I just support every single thing about the movement. But it kind of bothered me the way they portrayed the mom. It was like a character that I really love. Not love to hate, but I was sort of on the fence with it because I understood her intentions, but I feel like they almost stereotyped her as the extreme, as the man-hating feminist. And that is something that feminists today are fighting against, okay? This is a stereotype that we have to fight against to tell society not, you know, this is not what it looks like, because there's a stigma about calling yourself a feminist or feminism, because it ends in an ism, and typically that those words are more negative. And so I don't know. I appreciate that they brought her in and she was a hippie and she was down with the cause, but when she told her not to marry Luke or sort of that, or it was like, don't waste your energy on a man. Yes. I was kind of like, I was like, the writers, come on.
I think
that.
That's a fair.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to say like portrayal of all feminism, because I think if they had portrayed the entire movement in that way, I would totally agree with you. Like, this was a terrible stereotype and we don't want to go into this. But like, if you look at, like, her mom chose to have her at an older age, right?
Yeah.
So she probably was a part of second wave feminism, which is happening in the 60s.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, popular chant is, hey, Mr. Man Man, you're not our master. Like, you're coming from an era of women who, like, going from 0 to 60 really fast, and that created, like, kind of this distrust of, like, all men. Even, like, to the Lilith Fair, where you're like, we just do not allow men in this space. So I think that it was an interesting way to portray, like, two generations of feminists talking to one another. Mm-hmm. So I get what you're saying, because you definitely don't want people to walk away being like, ugh, this is what all feminists are like. But I did like that they showed, like this is genuinely what an activist looks like, and the fact that she was one of the people who held fast to her beliefs, was still, you know, conducting abortions under this, like, horrible, like, repressive regime is, I think, factual, and I really liked her. Even as she was telling her not to marry him, because we've seen so many people be like, so he was married before, and common belief is that if he cheated to get you, he's going to cheat after he has you. And I think that maybe her reasoning was more layered than just, he's a man and you're wasting your energy.
Well, she says it's time to get out and fight, not play house.
I was like, can't she do both?
Exactly. That's why I was like, she can get married and still go protest and protest with him and go do the fight.
Yes.
But
again, the belief being, though, that if once you have a family, like, when you have family, your priorities change. Like, you have, just because of how much time you have in a day, a lot of your time goes toward raising the family. And so you can't be like her mother is, which is out in the streets 24/7 constantly fighting.
Well, that's assuming she's going to have a baby, which she wasn't even pregnant yet. So.
Mm-hmm. But she knows her daughter. She knows what she wanted.
She's like, she wants to be a mom. Kind of, was there any more you wanted on this story?
No, I'm
good. Okay. No, it's great.
We'll talk all day, but we'll do that later.
Well, there was an interesting, like, it's just a small moment, but I kind of was like, oh, that's kind of weird and creepy. When she's in that next room, like a hangar space, and all the signs were in there,
I
was like, so they've taken down all the road signs, and that just was creepy.
Yeah, we noticed that from season one. I thought it was a really great payoff, because she was like wandering around, and you have no idea what streets are. That's a great way of controlling the population.
Absolutely.
You can't tell people how to get out.
Yes.
other than giant landmarks.
Yep.
But yeah, but it was cool to see, again, just remnants. It was like almost like a museum, which is so bizarre to see something you see every day.
It's creepy.
Be a thing of the past.
Yes.
Artifacts of the society that was. Yeah, really well done. Oh,
and
man.
Then creepy. Comedically gets interrupted by Omar of like, are you a good witch or a bad witch?
I love that line. Sign.
It's a nice way to break the ice of like, hello. And then the good question of, are you brave, stupid, or both? So... Well, do we think he was brave, stupid, or both? Because he himself doesn't say he's stupid, but he's like, I'm not brave, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, when I first saw him, I didn't know what he was. I thought he might have attacked her. You know, he had a very stern look, and he was kind of playing her a little bit, and then he smiles and say, okay, hi, June, welcome, or whatever it was. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he was mad at himself that he took June in. You know, he was, or in the car situation, he didn't want to do that. He was like, man, I'm a decent human being, damn it. You know, it was kind of like this sort of, man, why do I have a heart? Almost like hating himself for doing it because he knew it wasn't a smart thing to do. So, I don't know. Is he smart or brave? I think he was just empathetic to the situation.
Well, the question of smart or not also is, like, if smart means your own survival, then no, it's not smart.
I mean, this is a guy who's willing to hide his entire religion and faith. He has a child, so considering bringing in, you know, this is definitely probably a death sentence if you get caught. So that's definitely dangerous. On top of all of that, and this is a lot of conjecture, but I believe he's in a marriage of convenience. They don't seem like they're very much in love, but they both are willing to hide with one another.
Yeah.
You know, we produced our mandatory child. Here it is. Wow. Nobody yell at us. And we're just trying to get through our day through this life here. So I think that was kind of his problem. Like, his faith demands, you know, that you take care of this person.
What do we think was that message he got where he was saying, like, shit? Constantly.
Oh, he just said that the safe house was compromised. So he wasn't going to take her to his house. He was going to take her to
the safe house.
But that's been compromised. Which is why I was freaking out when June was running to the airport. And I'm like, girl, if the safe house isn't good, you're not good. Like, if they found one, they're going to find the end connector.
Yeah.
It's the trail. Like, the clues.
I was more curious what it was specifically. Because he kind of tells her. But I like that she was asking so many questions of him. But I'm like, girl, just go with it. Like, sometimes it's important to ask questions, but then sometimes I'm like, just you're going with it. And then he goes to leave, but I love that she stood her ground, like, no, you're not leaving me behind here.
Run me over.
So this is, you kind of mentioned this before we started. So we finally get to meet, like, the Econo people, essentially, like the Econo dwellings, which have been talked about before a little bit. So they're the ones in gray. So they're, like, not... They're, like, lower middle class, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody else is more the upper class, and they're a little more middle. Also, I thought it was interesting that was another mixed couple. So June is even more connecting, like, with their situation, their baby, and, like, associating with her own child, which is, like, aww. And then he was like, don't say anything. And then she keeps talking in the apartment. And I'm like,
good old June.
Wait, this is one of those you should wait for someone to talk to you first because you're kind of just making it worse. I mean, I get that she's trying to be nice to Heather, was the mom. But then it just kind of seems to, like, rub her the wrong way.
Okay, so multiple things on this. So first of all, June's been isolated for about 2 months. Yes, so human contact is true. Like, hi, person, what's going on? Can I engage with you on a human level? Yeah. I need this.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Heather was a vastly interesting character. Yes. I wanted to both throw coffee in her face and empathize with her. I can't imagine what it is like to not just lie, but constantly be in fear of your life, especially as a woman who's able to bear children.
Yeah.
It really solidified the handmaids as, like, the sinners of society, which I think is interesting that the wealthy are, like... Again, I compare slavery every week, but I'm going to keep doing it because the comparisons are there. If you look at, like, oh, well, blacks are unworthy and they're dirty and they're not human, I will still procreate and have sex with that, rape them because they can't give consent. Because, you know... I want to have a child or because I want to have sex or whatever the reason is. So it's interesting, one, that the wealthy are like, you're awful, but not too bad enough for me to stick my dick in. And then on the other hand, it's interesting to see Heather be like, blame her, essentially. Like, I could never give my child up.
Oh,
especially after all that we know that she's gone through to try to protect her child. The fact that she's literally on the run to protect this baby she is currently growing. Like, Heather, like, grow some eyes, girl. Listen to what this woman is telling you.
Well, June has a good response of, like, I used to think that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, wait, you think they just gave up their baby? You think this is just a... Yeah, sure. I mean, the other thing that's more like a smaller scale, but still that's like adoption of you are willing to give up your baby, but how still traumatizing it is for women to sure. do that. And like that... how quickly it happens, because sometimes it is literally like you give birth and like gone, mm-hmm. or like do you get a little bit of time with them or not? So it's the same thing of like, no, there's yeah. other circumstances. So Heather, you need to calm down too.
Yeah, calm. That was the thing. It her character, you know, like you said, it was both you wanted to empathize but also throw coffee in her face, because for me it was like she was the character of not privilege, but she was coming from a place of privilege mm-hmm. to say mm-hmm. that to June, and it's yes. like, how dare you? Do you know what a handmaid
especially
goes
if you look
through?
At the dichotomy
like,
of it.
Oh, you're so high and mighty. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Like, it's like Northern whites during emancipation
yeah.
era, where they were like, oh, it's awful that they're sleep. They can't move here. Like, they should not move here. But, like, it's awful what's going on down there. And that was exactly her positioning of, like, well, yeah. I don't want to be a handmaid. That would be awful. Yeah. Do you know like, what they threaten me with? But how dare you give up your yeah. baby? Like, look, yeah. if you're afraid of going into this, how do you think I felt having gone through it? Like,
yeah.
God.
And she's like, yeah, you can't be here. And you're just like,
the worst.
But then there's the scene, too, where June's at the curtains. I'm like, girl, shut the curtains.
That part irked me so bad. Like, yes. if you don't sit your ass Ooh, down.
The curious handmaid. Like, the curious cat, you know?
Yes. Like, it'd almost be better for her to be, like, down low, like, not where you would expect mm-hmm. to see someone, and, like, a smaller, yes. like, peephole. Yes. Not, like, her whole head, which, though we do get the exterior shot, and with the sun glare, it's a little hard to see, and but maybe still. It's somebody else. But still, which we do see somebody who does the same thing when she's walking away. Do we think that was somebody else on the run or just some snoopy neighbor?
Now, I automatically went to snoopy neighbor, but I like the idea of, like, the reversal of the situation, and we still don't know. The idea of how much distrust there is from both sides.
Yeah. Well, because she's walking, and June kind of looks up at her and looks away, and I kind of was like, oh, is that another one? Like, we don't know, mm-hmm. and we'll never find out, because June doesn't know. I was also kind of worried, too, that the little boy, Adam, would spill the beans, because he's such a little kid that, like,
he turned around and looked up, and I said, oh, Jesus.
Yes!
That kid is brilliant. He knows. He knows how to play the... You're talking about the little kid mm-hmm. that lives yeah. in the house? Oh, yeah,
he had so many smart, creepy, almost creepy comments to her of, like, oh, no, the neighbors hear everything. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how old are you, child?
He knows how to play the game.
Yes. yeah, then they find the Quran, and then, which... It was interesting when she pulls out the prayer rug and everything of like, oh, this is another group that's in hiding.
Yeah.
And then the 5 p.m., they're not there. What happened? And her like, I am not going to wait anymore. And so my question kind of for viewers and you ladies, mm-hmm. what would you do? Would you keep waiting or go?
I would go, but I wouldn't go to the airstrip. Mm. Here's the thing. I firmly believe, like, once one space is compromised, it's too easy for the other space to be compromised. So you're not going to get out that way. It doesn't make sense. But there's no back door in the apartment. No. So you can't... Otherwise, hiding there would be great. If you hear a knock on the door, find it, like, slip out, like, mm-hmm. hop down the window, something. But you can't do that in this particular apartment. So getting out is actually the best thing you can do. The family doesn't want you there anyway. You can't really help them do anything.
Yep.
And you do need to get out of this space. So leaving was smart. I would have tried to track my way back to the globe if possible, just because I know that space is most likely safe.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with it, and it's large enough that I can hide in there, and I know my way in and out and around if necessary. So, yeah,
in the chat, Stacy says she was reckless and desperate. Yeah.
Also fair.
Yeah, June's had moments where she's very smart and also very reckless, where you're just like, I get it, and then you're like, well, hold on. I do like, though, that the outfit / the weather leads to it being easier to hide that she's pregnant
mm-hmm.
because, like, her other coat how it buckled, so it's not so obvious that she's a pregnant woman, because that would get attention regardless instantly. Of who you are.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
So there's that. So would you run or would you stay? Put you on the spot.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, that is a really tough one, but I know that there was, like, you know, they communicated to her that they were going to go to the airstrip and that this was going down. So I think she just thought, you know what, I got to get to where I need to be, and I can't wait for this guy to control my destiny, if you will. And my thing was, I was scared for her to go out to public because she was dressed in a certain way, but this could be a small town. Everyone could know each other. And then they see a new face. I thought that too. I was
like, oh, you're new.
And then it's like, who's the new girl? Okay. That terrified me.
Covering my head would have definitely been a priority. Yeah, just like head down. She's like looking guards in the eye. I'm like, why?
Why?
Like, oh, don't do that. Yeah.
You just walk. Hopefully find someone to talk to.
So we have
I think she did the right thing. Sorry.
Yeah. No, no. So we also get a really quick little handmade flashback where she spots her mom. Well, Moira spots the mom on the photo. Now, had we known this before? Because I feel in the book they told this. So then I was like, yeah, we saw this before. But so in the show, we didn't see this yet.
I don't think so. No.
So that's kind of like, though that farm / like colony where the mom was didn't look as bad as it is now.
Early colony.
Right.
So this is before it's super industrialized. Yeah. This is the first wave of people.
Yeah.
And probably conditions are not as you know, bad. The water's not as contaminated, that sort of stuff.
So I'm curious if they sent the journalists there as well. Like anybody who was sort of challenging the system at the
time. It doesn't look like the journalists got out, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Or that. Globe. Well, maybe some of them, depending on where they were.
I mean, other areas. Yeah. I guess journalists were considered heathens.
Yeah.
you're right, unfortunately.
Did either of you feel suspicious about the girl on the train?
Absolutely.
Me too. I was like,
why would you pull a map out here? Like, just
go in the bathroom.
Wait. Yeah. Anything where people cannot see you. Like, open it up in your coat and put your head. Like, literally anything, but except for like map out. Yes. I don't know where I'm going.
And then even when she uses it, though, I'm like, dude, girl, you're out there, and there are no indicators to let you really know where you are. So this map is almost useless.
You're looking for landmarks. You're looking
for. But there's very few. There's no signs.
Well, and she's from the area, so there's a map on the train.
With that helps her a little bit.
I guess she knows the route that it used to take, or you know, something along those lines. Yep. So I get it, but
And also kind of very deja vu, her moment running through the woods and remembering being with her daughter, and just like, oh, that sucks.
Oh, the PTSD.
Yeah.
Just completely buckled by the fact that she's like, here I am running again, and I don't know where I am again, and I don't know what's going to happen next, and I miss my kid, and I'm leaving her behind. Like, gosh, what a powerful moment.
Oh, yeah. Then she has a nice, powerful statement when she is at the airport, and then she's thinking about her mother. And you raise your daughter to be a feminist, and she spends all her time waiting to be rescued, essentially, by men. Because waiting for Luke to save her and waiting for that other guy. So then that's why I'm like, I applaud your initiative, but I want more planning. So
that was a good line, yeah.
We have the, let's get the Moira a bit, and then we'll have the last part of that. So Moira's flashback, because I'm like, I don't think this is a gay bar in Canada right now. Do we?
No, it's definitely a gay bar in Canada.
I wasn't sure.
Oh, yeah, that's not a flashback.
But why did she say she was Ruby instead of saying Moira? Is it like her outside persona kind of thing?
So the way I read this was, I have been sexual as Ruby for a very long time. I have been pleasing people as Ruby for a very long time, and I'm not yet comfortable in the Moira skin that I wore before. So I'm Ruby, and I don't want you to know me, and I don't want you to track me down, and I don't really want you to touch me, but I want to have some kind of intimate relationship with you for these few moments.
Yeah.
And it was really powerful because she's, you know, not just a survivor of slavery, but now she's a survivor of sex slavery and of rape. And so this was a way for her to be in control and not be afraid.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice way to, even though she didn't receive pleasure, she could have pleasure by giving it to someone else.
Yeah.
So it's like not totally a one-way street of like, she still enjoyed it because she didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
Still very sexy scene, though.
Being in control of the situation.
But I felt bad when the other girl was like trying to kiss her and she's like, ooh, and like cringes. I'm like, oh.
But the way to respect her boundaries, though, be like, okay, well, if you change your mind, I'll be around. Call me.
Yes.
It's called consent.
Consent is sexy.
Because that is super sexy.
Yes. We talked about that on One on Earth. We're like, consent is sexy.
I love it.
So then that's that fun little bit. Okay, so present day. For some reason, I was thinking it's flashback, but it makes more sense. But I'm glad there's that many people to have a full gay bar in Canada. Because, like, I guess I didn't realize how many people might be there / safe there or in this town.
Well, I think they're in
a bigger city.
I think they're in Toronto.
Okay, then,
because that makes sense. That's going to be the closest city to Boston. And most of the time, when immigrants go to other countries, they're headed to big cities.
They congregate together, too.
Well, to large cities where there are government officials and things that can help you through your transitions or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's why I think they're in Toronto.
Okay. No, that totally makes sense. And then, so the last bit, with June is the airport, the pilot, and the guy's like, yeah, I'm a driver for Commander Wells. And, like, I was really skeptical of that guy walking up. I'm like, yeah, me too.
I was like, shoot him, let's go.
Yeah,
I, honestly, my instinct was like, drop him dead and we have to go. A driver, yes. I don't know you. Were you planning to be here? It's time to leave.
And then it's like, I wrote down, I'm like, oh, shit. And pretty much the plane got shot, which...
I knew it. She had this long-ass speech about saying goodbye. I'm like, girl, it's episode 3. We're not getting out of here. It's way too early. Yeah. Slow your roll.
These writers are just trying to kill her every episode.
Yes. They're trying to kill me. I have, like, a heart attack watching this episode. I'm like, there's so many close calls. I don't know what's going to happen next. There's no, like, book for me to, like, lean on. Like, maybe this will happen. No, it's just all up in the air. It's terrifying.
So do we think the people were tipped off or they got lucky?
I think they already knew where the freaking destination... They knew where the high spot was. It was compromised.
But does that mean they were waiting and then saw them? Yeah. Or like, okay.
Like a plane, one plane is very noticeable. You're going to see when it comes in, when it's landing. Mm-hmm. So all we have to do is hide out far enough that nobody can see us, turn our lights off, and just wait for the plane to start taking off.
Mm-hmm. I think that's why Mayday works the way that they do, like one step at a time, because they don't have people to connect the dots. And then that's what clearly happened. Since the other place was compromised, it sort of compromises the entire situation.
She should have waited. It's like, no, the place was compromised. Don't go. And then, but then there's the other last little thing that I noticed is, like, essentially thinking of her own mother and then her being a mother herself. Wow. One, asking for and giving forgiveness. Forgiving her mother for, like, the way their relationship was, and that mothers aren't always what their children expect them to be, and children aren't always what the parents expect them to be. I thought that was very poignant and sweet and sad all at the same time of... Oh.
And real, yeah. And that goes for, you know, fathers, too. Yeah. It's that dynamic is, you know, I don't know. I'm not a parent, but I have one, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting. I love, you know, just great writing. And they always do such a great job of making it relevant, even, you know, not just politically, but on a way that you can personally connect, so...
Any other last thoughts on this episode before we do a special segment?
Stunning episode. I can't wait till next season or next episode.
Yes. That's good.
So we have a fun new little segment we're going to be doing. It's Resist Sister. So it's somebody who stands out in the community and did some form of resistance. And so, Joelle, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so if you guys have been following the Met Gala on Twitter or socials or on E!, wherever you're watching it, Lena Waif came to slay. The theme this year is Heavenly Bodies and Catholic's influence on fashion. So she wore what, if you've gone to a black church, is a very atypical outfit. The black and white suit, prepared. She looks like an usher or parishioner or possibly even a choir director. But then on top of that, she has the pride flag decked out completely in rainbow, flowing behind her. It is an epic statement on queerness in the church, but specifically black queerness in black churches, and the idea that we exist and are frequently hidden. And to wear it over, like, literally draped over the entire outfit, to me makes such a profound statement of, like, we are here, we are believers, and we are part of your community, and you have to accept us because we're out now. It is beautiful. I've never cried at clothes before. This made me tear up.
Aww.
Well, it's a beautiful and stunning piece, and I'm glad we talked about that today, because I kind of felt it tied in with Moira of, like, I hope she can get to a place of being comfortable again and feeling safe to really get to. Because, after all the sexual trauma they've all been through, to be in a space where you're comfortable to enjoy sex again on your own terms. Because it's like that's
a journey,
trauma.
Dude.
It's a healing process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we honor Lena, who's the first black woman to win an Emmy for writing. She wrote the Thanksgiving episode of Master of None. She now has a great show, The Shy, which this lady hosts on the AfterBuzz channel. If you're just starting your watch on that, you can jump in there. But she's an incredible force in the LGBTQ movement. She recently did... spreading, I think, Epony with her, like, wife, and it's beautiful, and they look amazing, and she's, like, masculine lesbian, but, like, still owning her full, like, lesbian, like, she's amazing, she's wonderful.
She's a breath of fresh air,
truly.
She's what we need, it's great,
Any quick, would you like to do some quick predictions?
Oh, I have, before we do that, can I do, like, a little news segment?
Yeah.
Okay, great, so.
News.
AfterBuzz TV News.
There it is. Oh, yeah. I love that. Yes. All right. Ooh, the journalist in me is loving it. Okay, so so Margaret Atwood was on ABC News on Friday. They interviewed her on Nightline, and they're sort of just asking her, you know, what is season two about? The book is over.
Yeah.
Where are we going with this? And she says, you know, the U.S. has Gilead-like symptoms going on. Mm-hmm. The reason the show is so popular, she said, is very much connected to the fact that Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016. And she thinks that she's saying, like, oh, like, we think it would have been successful, but now it's at this sort of monster level of amazingness because it is so relevant. And what's the last thing? Oh, yeah. And then say, okay, so what is season two about? So she's basically said, season two is a call to action, and I want you guys to all go out and vote. That is from Margaret Atwood.
I dig
go
it.
Vote!
Yes!
Yes.
That's like, I love that comic where it says it shows a crowd of people and people go, I didn't vote because I thought my vote didn't matter. And there's more the majority than the people who went. So it does matter. Go out and
23%
vote.
23% of people voted in local elections last year. That's not enough.
Yeah. And you can't complain about it if you didn't at least go out and try.
Truth.
Yes.
Your vote matters.
Exactly. All right, cool. Any quick predictions?
Let's do predictions. You want to do predictions
as we roll out?
Yes, let's
do predictions as we roll out.
All right.
Yeah.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV prediction.
I think that something horrible is going to happen to our beloved. I don't know if her tongue will be cut out, if she will lose an eye, if they're going to take a hand. Something terrible that will not affect the pregnancy is going to happen to her because she done got caught. Also, I'm not sure if they're going to put her in the room or if they'll create a room at Offred's place.
A prison room.
Place. Mm-hmm. But we saw the woman. Nine months is a very long time. She's, four, 6 months into her pregnancy now?
Yeah.
So not that long, still, it's going to be terrible.
I'm thinking it might be a burn. They could burn something, do like a scarlet letter idea.
Again, we talked about it last week on Runaway Slaves. You got a big R carved onto your face or burned onto your face if you ran away. So
they could do it.
Very possible.
Yeah, that similar prediction. I didn't think of how they would torture her because I didn't want to start crying. But yeah, I thought, okay, so let's all take a deep breath and get ready for a very massive, horrible torture scene involving June. Because, you know, that's how they do it in Gilead.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough.
I hope we get more with Emily and the colonies. Quite a few people commented, thank you very much, on that video of was Emily in the right or not to do what she did? Oh,
yeah. She was in the right.
Yeah, so join our chat and think what you think about it, too. What that environment really is. What are they actually really doing out there? Do we get to learn more about it? I hope we get a little more information. I'm glad we actually got to finally see the colonies because at first it was just that place over there. I'm very worried for June to go back into that family because it's like that weird. They would want to. You ran away, so they obviously are pissed. But it's but she's pregnant. You can't really hurt her too much because that could stress and that could be a problem for the baby too. It's like that really delicate balance. And then would Nick get found out too? So I don't know.
Ooh.
Guys, stay tuned, guys. We'll talk about it.
Oh, all my goodness.
Where can they find you? Let's start at the
end. Hey, guys. I'm Joelle Monique. You can find me all over the internet. At Joelle Monique, Nerdist has a documentary coming on about Black Panther that I got to do with Sabina, who is amazing. So check that out. Also, if you're going to be in Ontario, California, not next weekend, but the following, the 19th and the 20th, I will be at their local Comic-Con. I've got two panels on Star Wars, including one on Thrawn, a Darkwing Duck panel, and I'll be talking to Jason Aaron about his beloved comic, Scalped. So come check it out. Say hey.
All right. Hey, everyone. Veronica Barriga here. You can find me on social media at Veronica B Online. And yes, I actually hosted the Shy after show, Showtime's The Shy, Lena Waithe. So if you guys are just catching that right now, I know a lot of people are just finding out about this amazing show. We do have an after show for it on AfterBuzz TV Dramas. And then, I'm working on something very exciting. I can't announce it yet, but next week I will let you guys know.
Ooh.
So,
looking forward to it. And my name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. Thank you so much for watching and joining us in the chat, and thank you for watching later. And we'll see you all next week. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other After shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.